Okay, here we go. All the cliches that we thought applied last game once again apply for the Montreal Canadiens. Welcome to Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. Kelly Rudy joins us at the bottom of the hour for more on Game 5. We'll talk with Kelly about a number of things, but mainly about the netminding situation between Vasilevskiy and, of course, Carey Price. Meanwhile, Stewie, Borny, how are you guys this afternoon?
Doing well.
Stanley Cup final shows are always a little bit difficult because you tend to repeat yourself and you feel that way. But then when you do radio, you have to always consider not everyone's going to be listening to every moment of every broadcast. I know, guys, swallow your ego. It is true. Borny, I want to start at your end. From what you've seen in this series so far, specifically the last game, how do you see tonight playing out?
Well, I think there's going to be a real concerted effort from the Montreal Canadiens to have a couple of things go the way they did last game. I think they saw the success they had when they were physical. You know, when they really went after guys, threw big checks, took control of the game, and went after their top dogs. You know, guys are worn down at this time of the year, and I don't think Kucherov's looking to take too many more blows to the ribs up against the board, so I imagine that's a part of the game plan, but I just can't get past the scoring the first goal thing. Like, it just changes the complexion of everything for Montreal and the way they have to play and plays into their strength so much more than when they have to chase the game a little bit. So get that first one, play physical, and I think they'd be very content with a close hockey game, 1-1, 2-1, 2-2, heading into the third period.
Stewie?
Yeah, if I'm Tampa Bay, I'm coming out gangbusters, and I wouldn't be surprised to see a shot discrepancy of, you know, 10-2 or 10-1, because they know that they are the better team in this series, and they can't give this Montreal Canadiens team any sign of life. So if they come out like they did and just, you know, keep their foot on the gas, try to draw a couple early penalties, let the power play go to work, I think they could, you know, potentially take Montreal out of this series and, you know, win the Stanley Cup. But I think now, with this Montreal team, they're probably one of the best counter punches teams in the whole entire playoffs, where, you know, they don't really know any better. They have a short memory span where if they're down one or two, they tend to, you know, forget about everything fairly easily and come back into games. But for Tampa right now, that key, that start is very, very key. Same thing for Montreal as well.
You know, I wonder about the point about physicality as well, because there's no denying that, you know, when Montreal's at its best with this roster, they're playing physical and they're hurting guys. And, you know, a lot has been made about, you know, cross checks per second by the Montreal Canadiens and their top four defensemen. And that's all legitimate and that's all true. And we saw Shea Weber really go hard at Braden Point. Whenever he got a chance to take a lick at him, he took good, healthy runs at him. Caught him a couple of times, narrowly missed him on one along the boards. The question that I have about that, like, if that's your strategy, Justin, like, we're going at Tampa hard, we're going to hammer these guys, we're going to pound the Tampa Bay Lightning, you're putting a lot in the discretion of the officials. And I look at last game and I say, okay, like, Montreal was able to be physical with Tampa, but the standard was set with one key non-call, and that was early, and it was Eric Staal horse-collaring Tyler Johnson. Mm-hmm. And then when there was no call on that, is that not a not-so-subtle message to both teams that, go ahead, boys, fill your boots. We don't want to get in your way. And if so, then that's advantage Montreal.
You know, the Tampa Bay Lightning still found themselves with five power plays last game. I agree that it definitely sets a tone, right, for the type of game you're going to play. And the refs can try to bring it, rein it back in after it gets away a bit, but it can be challenging. I would just say that is, if this is part of Montreal's game plan to go out there and be physical, that they're going to have to be very selective. I don't believe that you can keep Tampa Bay's power play off the board again. Like, you don't want to play with that amount of fire. So they need to be selective. And then the other thing is just you don't want to be running out of position chasing hits. So, you know, it's sometimes just a matter of waiting for your spots and picking them when you can. You're right, though. They're going to have to be careful unless the refs are really letting them go open season.
Yeah, but I don't understand, like, this sort of false outrage. Like, hasn't it been like this since, like, 1964, where in the playoffs there's a different set of standards? So right, wrong, or indifferent, I know that's just the way it is. But I just don't get how every single day now, after every game, oh, they missed this cross-check, they missed this stick, they missed this slash. That's playoff hockey. And you see the guys, when they raise the cup, they got blood dripping down their face. It's the hardest cup to win. And I just don't get it. I'm on Twitter, I guess, too much, because I see the tweets and I see the graphs and the charts about all these missed calls. But if I'm a player, from a player's perspective, you'd rather them call nothing than blowing the whistle every other shift and, you know, having 10 power plays apiece. Let the kids play, as they say.
You know, that's interesting, too. And Elliot's gone out of his way to make this point that it's not so much that the officiating standard changes as the player's standard changes. And maybe, like, listen, the Philadelphia Flyers, and I don't want to take anything away from their skill, because they had elite level guys, you know, Bernie Parent and Bobby Clark and Bill Barber and Reggie Leach and Rick McLeish, etc. But I mean, the Philadelphia Flyers essentially won two Stanley Cups by saying, look, they can't call everything, so let's just do whatever we want out there. They're not gonna sit us down for 60 minutes. Mm-hmm. It seems as if, and this is true of playoffs as well, and one of the things we love about it, you can't pace yourself. Like, you can pace yourself in the regular season. Like, there are nights where, we talk about it all the time here on the show. Oh, this guy took a night off. Yeah, this guy had this guy's ducking checks last night. This guy really didn't show up. This guy's a no-show. And part of that is our job. But the other part is, I look at it and I say, regular season, I understand that. I understand pacing yourself through an 82-game schedule. I think it's ridiculous to expect players to bring it 100% 82 times a season. I really think that's unreasonable, which is why we should really applaud those that do. But in the playoffs, one of the things that we love about it is nobody paces themselves. No one paces themselves from game to game. No one paces themselves in game. You know, very seldom do we ever, at the end of a game, say, yeah, that guy took the game off. No one takes games off in the playoffs. And I think that's where, you know, you talk about the Twitter outrage about you missed this call, you missed that call. I don't think referees, to your point, Sue, have an appetite to fill the box all game long, and they have to be selective about what they call, because no one's taken any shifts off and everyone's going at each other really hard. Do you agree or disagree with that one, Justin?
Yeah, you know, that's a huge part of playoffs, right? It's why we talk constantly about it, like, being a war of attrition. You just got both sides just pedal down the whole way. You know, by the time we get to this point in the Stanley Cup final, you've kind of got two teams full of just broken bodies. And I don't think we see the level of physicality at this point of playoffs that we would see in the first round. Like, when playoffs first start and everyone still has a ton to give, I think that's the peak level of, like, physicality, dirty play, you know, should the refs be involved? That's why, like, give credit to Montreal to bring it last game and put the refs in that position. It's tough to do. It's tough to have a body and the level of health and energy level to play like that. So credit to them. We don't usually see it this late in the season.
You know, Jeff, go ahead, Steve.
I said, I'm not really trying to pull the curtain behind the officiating, but I want to ask you, Jeff, don't they together, you know, before the season or midseason, and sort of have an evaluation of what should be called, what shouldn't, and how the game should be called? They don't just give each ref carte blanche, hey, call it any way you want, and we'll reconvene at the end of the season. So for everyone to think, well, this is on just the referees themselves, you know, I think it goes all the way to the top. So if you really want changes, I think the GMs really need to get together in the offseason, get together, talk about exactly what is acceptable and what isn't. But I don't just get the flack that the refs get all the heat, and the players as well, too, when, you know, that's there's true. A lot behind the scenes that's that the true. People don't know what's going on.
That's true. And every series has a crew chief as well. And, you know, they go over things like the calls that are made, what types of calls do we want to see enforced, what do we want to heavy up on, what do we want to back up on. You know, even tiny little things that we never even think of as we watch the hockey game. Where do you want your officials? Like, where do you want the official when there's a play around the net? Where do you want the officials on an entry? Where do you want the officials on an exit? Like, things we never, ever think about. Those are things that are gone over before every series and after every game. Here's where we want you to stand when there's a scrum in front of the net. Some crew chiefs, I would imagine, want you close and on top of the action. We've seen referees on top of the net. Others might want you more away from the play to make a call. But yeah, absolutely, Stewie. Like, this isn't just referee X is going to decide how he's going to call it. Once upon a time, that was true. And many people, I'll tell you what, many people think that was better. Because going into a game, if you had, you know, pick a referee, Carey Fraser for the obvious reason, because he always comes up at playoff time in Toronto. Historically, a lot of people liked it better. A lot of players and coaches liked it better because you knew what type of game you were going to get out of an official. Like, Fraser calls these penalties. This is what he likes, where someone like Paul Stewart might not call this. This is how much Stewart's going to put up with, whereas this is how much Fraser is going to put up with. Some people say we liked it better that way, and it was better that way, because at least you knew how they were going to call the game. And it varied from personality to personality, and you can make the howls about consistency, but still, you understood that this was a game called by this official. This is a Bruce Hood game. Like, it almost became a signature. Now there seems to be, although you'll never get it, a hue and cry for consistency. What do we always hear? Whether it's Connor McDavid, after winning every single award he's up for, what does he talk about? We just want consistency. First of all, you're never going to get consistency, because calls are still subjective. The only call that's not subjective is puck over glass. That's it.
I wonder, Jeff, if there is advances that could be made by an analytics department in scouting the referees and saying, hey, statistically, this guy calls way more hooking and tripping than this guy. This guy will call roughing after the whistle penalties, and like actually posting something before the games. Like, tonight it's this guy. Here is his... his tendency in calls. And I bet you could end up at the end of the season with more power plays for than against if you had an idea what you're going at every game with.
I'll go you one better. I'll take that even a step further. How does the official in question call penalties on the home team versus the away team?
Yeah, you think some guys have like a bias towards the home team?
Like anybody else, no one likes to be booed in a building. I think it's subtle, but it's there.
Mm-hmm. Let's go total lunatic fringe. Let's let the other team call the penalty. Someone does an infraction, you charge, but every penalty you call costs you $50,000. So if you really wanted to call all these penalties, it's going to cost you a lot of money. So I think let's go completely off the board here. But I honestly, I don't know if I'm conditioned, Jeff. Jeff, I don't know if I'm conditioned here, but I just don't get the outrage. Like it's not as bad as the people are making it to be. So I just don't understand it. So maybe I'm just a product of the system. But for the refs to catch this much flack for the last couple of years, I just don't get it. I'm not siding with Gary Bettman in any sense of the word, but I don't see the same thing that all the writers are seeing.
You know what I think? Honestly, guys, when it comes right down to it, like, it put me up against the wall. And like, I honestly think that this game right now is too fast to be called effectively. To a standard that you want.
Bingo.
To a standard that we want, it's too fast to be called effectively. And no amount of training and or punishing referees or innovations. Right now, the way the game is, for the standard that fans want, you better be subtle with one thing. You're not going to get it.
Do you guys have any experience calling games? Like, it's brutal.
I've done it before. It's hard, man.
So hard.
You know,
I've hated calls I've made 10 seconds after I've made them. Like, ah, it was a bad call. You know, like, there's a human element of, like, you have a split second to react. You react, and you go, I didn't like my reaction there. It's just, that's life, man.
There's, I can't remember, was it soccer? There was one famous, not too long ago as well, one famous suspension for abuse of an official, and part of the punishment was the player in question had to officiate like 5 games, or had to officiate 10 games.
I love it.
Like, I really think, and Stewie is the player's guy, is going to hate this, but I honestly think, I don't know if this came every part of the punishment, like, okay, now you got to go officiate NHL games. Oh boy, would that be a wrinkle to introduce into the NHL. But I really think for the quote-unquote good of the game, I think all players should have a hand at officiating somewhere along the line. Have a hand, whether it's like a spring hockey.
You ref a game in the ECHL as punishment?
Yeah.
Take a course. Just learn what it's like to get chirped at for 60 full-on minutes. And it's a tough job, and I'm not being as sympathetic towards the referees, but it's a tough, tough job. And I just don't get it. I get frustrated because, I'm on Twitter way too much just reading all these tweets, but maybe there's a reason why they're trying to fast-track some ex-players and giving them an opportunity to get to the NHL, because maybe they know some of the other guys are getting a little bit long in the tooth and a little bit slower, but you need faster, more in shape guys going up and down the ice. So that's not taken away from the current, but the future of the game, it's fast. I'm on the ice with 15-year-olds right now, and they're ahead of me. They're ahead of me right now. Obviously, I'm a little bit ticker in the waist, but the game is so fast. It's evolving. And I always go back to the when I saw Connor McDavid, I think it was about 3-4 years ago, on the ice at BioSteel camp at St. Mike's, and he was going so fast. My reaction was, like, he needs to slow down. He might get hurt. And here I am talking about a professional athlete 3 years removed from the game. So it's definitely very, very quick.
Did you ever get approached, Justin, or did you ever think about officiating in your career? Because you were in that spot where the NHL would aggressively recruit.
Yeah, maybe. No, I never heard from anyone. I just never could have done it. Because which is somewhat ironic that I'm in media now, but I was going to say, I just couldn't imagine choosing to be the guy that people just yell at all day for a profession. But then now I realize I've done that in retrospect.
Yeah, but, think about your career choices, Justin. Yeah,
but no, I do think this is part of the problem too, is that I think, like a lot of people, I think I could do it. And maybe I need to go back and ref now to be proven wrong. I told you it's super hard, but I don't know. You're right, though. They're looking for people like me, couldn't quite make it to the NHL, but still understand the game and how it's played at a high level.
At a pro level, and can play professional hockey.
Yeah.
And can skate, and can think. And I guess the big one, to Stewie's point, is like thick skin, too.
I guess the ladder to referee, you don't really make much money till you're in the NHL, do you? I think it's too late for me to go back and start over, Jeff.
You got to really love the game. Yeah. You got to really love the game to do it. Speaking of the game, based on what we see at practice today with Montreal, no lineup changes. Should that surprise anybody? And if you're Jesperi Kotkaniemi, how are you feeling today, Stewie?
No egos, and I think that's part of the reason why this team is gone so far. Is, you know, it's about the team and not one individual player. And there's been some tough decisions made by Dom Ducharme this whole entire playoffs. You know, he scratched Caulfield and Kotkaniemi. It wasn't really a popular decision. Ended up working out and putting them back in. Tatars hasn't played since what was it, round one or round two. So again, it's tough. But again, if it's a young guy, I understand his confidence and stuff like that too. But I go back to when they're putting the camera on him in practice when they announced that Romanov was playing. He was happy for his teammates. So I can understand if it's early in the playoffs or midseason, but right now there's one goal, winning the Stanley Cup. You got to put your ego and check it at the door.
Yeah, I'm in, you know, on team. By the way, Elliot yesterday said to you, Stewie, like, did your coaches change the lineups, you know, after you guys won? And the answer was no. I don't think that means you can't. You know, I really don't. It's almost like locking yourself into a superstition. You know, when you're like, well, this worked just like this. So it's like us watching a game. Everyone sit in the same chairs and wear the same clothes, and it'll go just the same. It's like that's not the reality. Games are different, and, you know, the matchups are different when you don't have last change, and I'd be in favor of a coach changing their lineup. However, you cannot deny that Evans and Romanov were good, and I can't say I noticed Kulak too much outside of one error, actually a fairly significant one on the Maroon goal. So, you know, I think maybe, if anything, I could have seen Kulak coming out. But otherwise, those guys played well enough to stay in.
It is interesting, too. I think it's almost a philosophy that insulates coaches from criticism from above. Because if things are going well and you change it and you lose, the question becomes, why'd you change anything? And if it works out, you're looked at like a genius, but that's a pretty big risk.
It's such a hockey thing, isn't it, Jeff? Like, that's so hockey. Like, self-preservation.
I don't want to stick myself, put myself out there too much. I don't want to take a chance. I want to make sure that I'm insulated from criticism. It's almost like it's such a defensive way to think.
It's
right?
Like self-preservation. It's like, what can people say about me if this doesn't work?
Yeah.
It's ingrained in hockey culture. And Jeff, I think you're the same way. You got your lucky microphone from the studio. You brought it home during the pandemic. You've been using that microphone now for 2-3 years. Yeah. So I think it's something where that's ingrained in the hockey culture. Yeah, and it goes back to me. And, you know, I used to hate wearing brown suits because I went and I wore a brown suit one game and I was -3 and I was scratched for like 15 games and I never wore a brown suit again. And we were doing TV Wednesday Night Hockey one time, Jeff, and I wore a brown suit. I'm like, oh my gosh, here we go with the brown suit. And I'm telling you, I think you looked at me one time and said, Stewie, you got marbles in your mouth? Why do you keep stuttering? But it was the brown suit. So I blame my bad TV appearance on brown suit. So those are superstitions. That's hockey players. That goes back to, you know, not changing your tape job or your stick color. It's ingrained in the hockey player and I understand it for sure.
That's because you bought a new tongue that day and you're breaking it in on the big show. And I told you not to do that, Stewie. Did you have any of those, Justin? Those goofy, I mean, I guess we all do. I'm sure I do, too. I must have a few.
Well, it's tough to separate routine from superstition. You know, as a golfer, you know, you're supposed to have like a trigger, right? Like you go through the same pre-shot routine and then right before you hit the ball or whatever, you know, you kind of have a same build up to it. That's not superstition. That's a part of what gets you in the right position to hit the ball. You know, hockey is a bigger version of that. I had a pretty, you know, regimented routine, but there was nothing where I was like, you know, like because I dressed, you know, right to left. I don't think that's a superstition. That's just you got to put both of them on. I don't know. I picked a direction, so no, I wasn't overly superstitious.
We're gonna get into this with Kelly Rudy in a couple of seconds, but Vasilevskiy versus Price from the beginning of the playoffs until right now, maybe more specifically with Vasilevskiy. There were moments in that Florida series where we kind of went, I don't know here about Andre Vasilevskiy. And then as the playoffs have gone on, he's gotten better and better and better. Stewie, do you have a thought on the Tampa netminder? We're going to bring Kelly on here in about 7 or 8 minutes, and he'll sharpen the pencil more. But Andre Vasilevskiy, Anthony Stewart, your thoughts?
He's still my leading Conn Smythe Award winning goaltender. And again, there's going to be some hiccups, especially when you're going all the way. Did he have an off night? I don't think so. I'm trying to think which one of those goals he should have had. The Anderson one on the first one didn't really have an opportunity. Maybe the Romanov goal. But again, he's been dialed in. And I think, you know, it's just more of the media where it's going to say, hey, you know what? We got to point the finger at something. We're talking about Carey Price's performance after game 3. Those questions have gone away. Same thing with Vasilevskiy. The one thing that I'm more interested now is his rebounding game. Every single game that he's lost, he's come back and have a shutout. So I'm more worried now. Is he going to get that shutout tonight? And I wouldn't be surprised if he did it.
Yeah, no, that's been a hallmark of what Tampa Bay has been for years now, is their ability to bounce back, and Vasilevsky's been the backbone of that, obviously. The last 4 series that Tampa Bay has won, they have won on the backs of a shutout by Vasilevskiy. So all 3 this year, and then to win the Stanley Cup last year. Now, that doesn't mean he hasn't had opportunities that he's missed, because that has happened, but usually when it's time for Tampa to get it done, he finds a game where he really locks it down after a loss. I expect to see something similar tonight.
So where do you guys fall in then? Like, if the cup is awarded tonight and you guys have a vote for the Conn Smythe trophy, should I ask you who is your choice or which Russian is your choice? Vasilevskiy or Kucherov? Or do you want to throw Brayden Point into that conversation? Those seem to be about the 3 that you should focus on. Stewie, we'll go to you first.
I'm going to go with Vasilevskiy. I just think those bounce back games that he's come back with a shutout and pitched a shutout, those games have definitely been next level. He's been dialed in the whole entire playoffs. Kucherov, he's got a lot of those cookies on the playoffs. It's nothing short of spectacular, but when you win, I think the goaltending help gets you there. I'm going with Vasilevskiy.
All right.
I'm on Kucherov. I just think you know, the Tampa Bay power play in the regular season operated about 22%. They get Kucherov back in the power play. They're at 34%. Every time he touches the puck, it seems like it's going to direct it somewhere to a goal. You know, he gave one to Point. That Point rung off the post last game. He tipped one off in the back door. Like, he's just so good for their power play. And I think he's been the biggest difference maker. It's close, but I got Kucherov.
We'll get into this with Kelly Rudy here at the bottom of the hour. Game 5, packed house, Amalie Arena, tonight, 7:30 the pregame, 7:30 Eastern with Hockey Central and your host, Ron McLean. The game gets underway just after 8 o'clock, Tampa and the Montreal Canadiens. Tampa looking to win the Stanley Cup, and of course Montreal looking to stave off elimination and take this thing back to the Bell Center, and we should also add, and the surrounding areas. More Hockey Central in moments. We'll continue. Sportsnet 590 The Fan in a moment. Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday at noon. It's Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne standing by for Kelly Rudy from Hockey Night in Canada. Before we get there, I want to make you guys feel old. You ready for this? Like, you get to a certain point in your life and everything makes you feel old. Here's another rung on that ladder. The London Knights of the OHL today have signed second-round draft pick in the OHL draft, Oliver Bonk.
Yes.
Son of Radek Bonk.
I had a radical poster when I was younger.
Did you have
one? From Ottawa.
That's right. I played Carlton Place. Did your dad coach there? He coached there, didn't he?
Coached him in Vegas, yeah.
That's awesome.
I bet you they were really committed there in Vegas, yeah.
Yeah, for sure, right? Dad, too.
Do we have Kelly standing by? I do. Okay, we have Kelly standing by. From Hockey Night in Canada, to further discussion, listen, there's no point in us talking about goaltenders. We can actually bring on Kelly Rudy, who knows something about goaltenders. Here he is from Hockey Night in Canada, Kelly Rudy. Kelly, how are you today? Thanks for doing this.
Jeff, Justin, and Anthony, I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We're really good. We're just before the break having the conversation about Vasilevsky and haven't really touched on Carey Price yet. You can sharpen the pencil on that a lot more than we can. But I've made the point that Andre Vasilevsky is perhaps the closest thing that we've seen to Dominik Hasek. And let me be upfront about this. Nobody is going to ever play like Dominik Hasek again. But just the way, just like how almost like rubbery he is, Kelly, he's the closest thing we have to him. Agree or disagree with that?
Jeff, I think that's a really good comparison. He's so powerful, right, when he pushes off his strides. And I know people always said, by the way, I'm on record, and Jeff, you know this, I'm on record saying that Hasek is the best goalie to have ever played the game.
Agree.
But, you know, when people look at him, and if you don't really know the position, you say he's so unconventional, he doesn't really have any structure. Well, Dom had all the same structure that everybody else had, like his skating movements, his drills, all the things that he worked on. He did the same thing as everybody else, but he just ad-libbed better at a certain time. And that was what was so remarkable about him. And you're very right about Vasilevsky. He has a lot of those same sort of traits, and that, you know, he does a lot of the same things similar to everybody else, but at some point he sort of just abandons the system and I'm just going to make a save however possible it needs to be.
Carey Price had a good bounce back game 3, making 32 saves. Did you notice a difference between game 4 and the previous 3 where he let in 14 goals?
You know what, Anthony? I'd say that for me, you know, I think that, first of all, he let in some screenshots, which, although not necessarily a goalie's fault because nobody's in front of him doing the job they need to do, but I didn't think that he was also trying hard enough to see around the screens. So I thought it was a really good start that he had. I mean, you guys know the first shot he faced in the last game was a great shot off the faceoff 29 seconds into the game off Kucherov, and so that was a great one. Then there was another great save off Coleman, kind of backdoor, and I really thought his teammates were nervous looking for the first 15 minutes or so of that first period, and so the work that Carey put in was instrumental in getting them over the hump, because they did not look good for the first little while.
Kelly, did you see anything that Montreal did in Game 4 that looked like maybe they found something they could replicate going forward, a way through to win a couple of hockey games to get back in this series?
Yes, Justin, and I know you're on top of it. You know exactly what I'm going to say. They were pounding the Tampa forwards, right? I mean, they made life miserable for the Tampa forwards, and that included Kucherov, Point, Cirelli, so many others. That is a formula. If they can sort of replicate that, they have a chance again tonight, because, I mean, that was vicious. They were on top of those guys every single shift, it seems. And, you know, I'm not going to say that Tampa was intimidated, because they're not. I mean, I don't think there's any chance you're ever going to intimidate a guy like Point. But the fact of the matter is it makes life a whole lot more difficult.
With Kelly Rudy from Hockey Night in Canada. Kelly, no one, I don't think, probably in the history of Hockey Night in Canada, is as much of a student of body language as you are. I mean, you talk about it with a lot of consistency, and it's always interesting. But I'm curious about one player, and we've already mentioned him. Considering, listen, a lot of times at big moments, there's just a complete lack of reaction. How do you read Carey Price? Like, I'm always curious about how you describe players in warm up and what that means for the games. But like, when you look at Carey Price, when you watch Carey Price, is it possible to read him at all?
No, and you're so right about body language. That has been my thing forever. Even as a player, I was like, you know, that gave me, I thought, a real insight into what a player is feeling, how he's dealing with the situation. And Carey Price is impossible to read, right? So he gives you no indication. Even after Anderson scored the game-winning goal, his non-reaction was incredible. Wife and I we watched the highlights after, and we watched that, and we're like, how can he be like that? Like, that just doesn't make sense, right?
Right.
I mean, right? You stave off elimination. You could have been going home that night or the next day, and it's a huge, huge goal. And there was no reaction. He went, he grabbed his water bottle and turned around again, and that was it. And it I don't know how to make sense of that, because you would think with all the adrenaline going through a guy's body that you would have no choice but to react. Like, your body dictates that, right? Not the mind. And so that was really interesting.
You did a segment last game on Josh Anderson and just his ability to take over the game with his speed and ability, to score in front of those tight areas there. So what makes him a bit of an enigma, and what makes you wanting to see more from Josh Anderson? Yeah.
Because he teases you, right, with those great performances and those great rushes and, you know, the things that where, you know, you're at a point where you're, okay, I think he's going to take the next step. I'm going to share a story with you guys that may shed a little bit of light on what he needs to do. First of all, he's just a straight-ahead player, right? But he doesn't pass the puck. He doesn't make his line mates more dangerous. But that's something he's going to have to work on in the future. Not now during the playoffs, not now during the finals. That's for down the road. But, you know, so my first year in the minors, Jeff, you'll remember this name, Justin Anthony, I don't know if you will, but my coach was Fred Creighton. And lovely, lovely man, great man. I had him for 2 years in the minors. So we're flying somewhere my first year, and back in the days when all the seats weren't full, so you had plenty of empty seats on the plane. So I see Fred get up from his seat, and he makes his way back, and I can see he's making eye contact with me, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, isn't this nice? Fred's going to come back and sit beside me, and he's going to kind of get to know his young goaltender, right? So he sits beside me, and he says, first thing he says to me, have you always been this inconsistent? So the message was sent, and the message was received, but that's kind of like Josh Anderson, right? Like, you know, he is terrific. I'd want him on my team any day, but I just need more of the consistency. And you guys know, scoring is, you know, it comes and goes. But we just need to see those scoring chances on a more consistent basis, so he puts the defenders on their heels almost every single shift.
Didn't you win a championship with him in Indianapolis?
We won two together.
Right.
Yeah, he was a fabulous man.
Kelly, how's it been covering this Stanley Cup playoff run? I mean, weird from home, a distance, now a little bit in person. What has it been like for you? You guys have been working your tails off like every night, but boy, it's been a weird year to cover a run like this, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's been way different. I'll be really honest and upfront with everybody. So I was really struggling with my mental health, and so that's why I had to choose to stay home for the finals. You guys have noticed everybody else is on the road, whether it's in Toronto or Montreal and a little bit in Tampa. And so it has been different that way. I kind of miss it. Like, for the first time, game four, I saw everybody in Montreal, and I was thinking, man, Kelly, you know, I wish I was there, but just, you know, events sort of kept me from doing that, but I'm happy to say I'm doing much better and feeling like I am through the worst, and I'm really looking forward to the start of next season again after this final is over.
That is, yeah, such great news that you're feeling that way, Kelly, certainly. I don't think anyone, like, this is one of those seasons where I think for everybody's mental well-being, and I've tried to go, you know, I've tried to, like, watch what I say and how I think and what I do and how I feel, because I honestly, Kelly, I think this, and we'll just use a hockey season, but really day-to-day life, this is more so than any other year in our lives. I've felt that this is a year we need to cut everybody a lot of slack, and even if something doesn't make sense to you, just let people do it. Don't judge, don't condemn, just let people be. So, like, I look at, you know, if you say, oh, you know, I like to be in Montreal with the crew and I'm used to this, but I had to take care of myself. Good for you, man. Like, honestly, good for you for taking care of yourself. And I look at this, like, I look at the playoffs right now, just like we did in the bubble. And we say, this isn't just a physical challenge for all these athletes and their families, but this is a mental challenge as well. Like, this is, you know, these last two Stanley Cups, you can make the argument, may be the hardest of all to win.
I agree, Jeff. It's so true. In fact, I'm in my truck right now driving to one of my favorite spots for my much-needed walk of the day, right? I just need to get out of my house. I need to get moving. I need to get make sure my thoughts don't take over. And I'm not talking about my hockey thoughts. I need those later. I need the other thoughts to go away or rest for a little bit, and my happy place is going for a great walk.
That's awesome. That's great, Kelly.
Okay, Kelly, I'm going to put you on the spot here, and we know Tampa Bay's the odds-on favorite to close it out a lot sooner than later, and say it does go seven games here. Who is your pick for the Conn Smythe Trophy?
I'm going to go with Vasilevskiy. I just think he's been terrific. I struggled with this. Ron McLean put me on the spot last pregame, and I had to choose, I think, between Kucherov and the goaltender, and I chose Vasilevskiy simply because, and maybe I'm a little bit biased, you guys can put me in my spot, but I think it's the most important position. It's the hardest position. There's more stress in that position. There's more eyeballs on that position all the time. And so I'm going to go with the fabulous Russian goaltender.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty popular pick through it all here. Do you think that anything tactically would change for the Tampa Bay Lightning? Like, this to me feels like a team who has a formula, is strong in second games. Like, you don't think that anything's going to change drastically, do you? I just imagine them going out and running it back exactly the same way.
Yeah, I don't see anything changing. Why would they, right? They have transformed their organization from, say, 3 years ago, from a club that was highly skilled but maybe didn't like or couldn't find another gear and play that, you know, that really competitive playoff hockey. Well, that's them now. They're the best in the league, I think, and I wouldn't change a single thing. Not a darn thing.
Kelly, just mentioning Russian netminders there a second ago, and Andrei Vasilevskiy certainly. I wonder if you have an idea, a thought, a theory on Russian goaltenders. Once upon a time, the greatest goaltenders came from Canada, period. And then it was Finland, period. Yep. And now it seems as if it's Russia, period. Do you have a thought on that or a theory about it, or maybe even an explanation?
Well, my guess would be, more than a theory or an explanation, my guess would be that it seems like countries go through stages where they recognize their strengths and weaknesses, and then at one point, there weren't a ton of great Russian goaltenders. My theory is they really thought that they need to work on that position. Mm-hmm. They studied it a ton. They had a ton of great coaches. They worked on it. They decided that they really had to put in the work in that area. And so I think we are seeing the benefits of that work. I'll say this, just in terms of Canadian goalie coaches, man, we have a ton of great ones in our country. And I've been in contact with a bunch of them throughout the last, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years. And the work they're doing and how they break it down is just phenomenal. Like, it's been really cool for me to sort of become a student of the game again from a different perspective. And so it's great. And I think that's why you're seeing it with the Russian goaltenders. Every country, they're getting better and better at understanding that position.
You know, one of the interesting, you mentioned that about Canadian trainers, and you're right. Like, there are so many great goalie coaches in this country. The one criticism has been, unlike Finland and to another extent Russia, that there's not enough shared information amongst coaches from coast to coast to coast, or goalie coaches, that is, in Canada, unlike in Finland, where information resources are all shared. Ditto for Russia as well. Do you find that enough goaltenders share information, or they sort of keep everything and, this is my knowledge and this is my client base, and we got to keep everyone to the outside away from that? Do you find that in Canada, Kelly?
A little bit, Jeff. One of the things, I think there's a couple reasons for that, though, because to a certain degree, they can't all agree on the same way to play for every situation, right? So, I'm on board with that. Yeah, like I said, I've been talking to these guys, and I don't agree 100% with some of the things that they're teaching or what they view as important strategy. So I have to be careful here, too, because as much as I respect them, I don't agree 100% with everything that's going on. So here's my sort of thing for the goaltenders that are being taught. I think they should still be the ones ultimately with the final say. And I'm in the spot, right? I'm in the net. I should be the one with final say about how I'm going to play this situation. And it can't just be all technique. It has to be, I've got to read the play. And here's one of the things that I'm really big on, and this is something that has started to happen, I'd say, the last 3-4 years. And Dave Pryor, I believe, was the first guy to say this publicly as an NHL goalie coach when he's with Vegas, 3 years ago? And he said something like, I want goaltenders brave enough to stay on their feet longer than other guys. And that's kind of the one thing that I'm really picking up on that is really important to me. Hey, listen, I have no problem with dropping to your knees and making the saves, as all goaltenders do in today's game. But if you're watching, and I showed some clips with Vasilevskiy and Price earlier in the series, where in certain situations, they stayed on their feet and made a save that way. And that was so great to see, because why give away freebies high short side all the time, right? Stay on your feet and read the play. And that's exactly what we're starting to see more of. So it's a long-winded answer that I gave you, but it's a complicated situation and it's a complicated position, right? So I think that the reason why they're not sharing the information is because we all see it a little bit differently.
This is great information and great perspective. Kelly, enjoy your walk. Enjoy the game tonight. We'll look for you on Hockey Night, Game 5, Tampa and the Montreal Canadiens. Thanks so much for this, Kelly.
Thanks for the chat, gentlemen. Take care.
Thanks, Kelly.
There he is, the great Kelly Rudy from Hockey Night in Canada, 7:30 Eastern, the pregame show. Puck drops just after 8 o'clock at Amalie Arena. It is Game 5. The Cup will be in the building. More in moments. Hockey Central continues. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Duncan Keith get traded yet?
I don't know. I got stats for you, Jeff.
How many days are we into this? Yeah, you got stats? You got numbers? You got facts? What do you got?
Yeah, while we were on the air, I had Sportsnet stats look something up for us.
Steve Fallon, the great Steve Fallon.
Yeah, in this case, Josh Lassard as well. So thank you to Sports and Stats. Elliot Friedman mentioned the other day that his Conn Smythe vote, he was leaning towards Vasilevsky because of his bounce back games.
Kucherov. He was leaning Kucherov.
Oh, I thought he was Vasilevsky. Okay. Well, either way, I have stats on both guys.
Stewie's going Vasilevsky.
So going back to the start of the 2020 playoffs, Tampa Bay's lost 14 times, 13-0 so far in their next games. In those 13 games, Vasilevsky is 13-0, 1.29 goals against with a .949 save percentage and 4 shutouts. I don't know what you know about goaltending. That's pretty good. Kucherov over those games also played all 13, 25 points, plus 14, 11 power play points, 46 shots. I've seen people using those games as a tiebreaker, and to
3-1 Montreal. 3-1 Montreal. Let's go.
that is interesting about Kucherov too in Tampa and that history, because after they bowed out, Elliot and I were talking about this on the podcast the other day. After they bowed out against Columbus 4 games straight in one of the more spectacular sweeps we've seen in this generation of hockey, that year of the draft in Vancouver, his name was everywhere. Like everyone we talked to, everyone I would talk to on the floor on day one, it's like, are you hearing Kucherov's name? I'm like, yeah, it's weird. And he's like, every team that I talk to, like, they're asking the same question. Are you hearing that Kucherov is actually available? Like, it would have been a whopper of a deal for whomever, but they were sour on Kucherov. It's bizarre to think of now when you think of what he's meant to that team and what he means to them now. And he may win the Conn Smythe Trophy tonight if Tampa wins this thing. But, man, that Vancouver draft, his name was everywhere.
Could have had a Hall of Famer if you wanted him.
It would have cost you a lot. Stewie, you're saying 3-1 Montreal tonight?
Yeah, I think the first 10 minutes is going to dictate this game. And you had the best quote on this show, I think. Top 10 quote. If it's tied, it's going to be a tie in favor of the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
the longest, longer it goes tied, I think it gives Montreal the edge.
It's tied 0-0 for Montreal. Here's the prop bet of the night. Pornix, I know you love to gamble.
Yes, yes.
Does Corey Perry's nose bleed tonight?
He gets blood on him. I just don't know whose it's going to be.
Fair enough. Enjoy it tonight. Pregame at 7:30. Puck drops at 8. The Bolts and the Habs on Sportsnet.